Itchy.
How does the Mr. Rogers Beers song start?
Itchy.
I forgot.
Mr. Rogers?
Will
it's
you be
a beautiful
mine?
Day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine?
There we go.
Could you be mine?
Welcome, neighbors.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Oh,
awesome.
Would you be mine? Would you
I
be
think
mine?
We
won't you be my neighbor?
Open this way every time. Welcome to another episode of the Nerdcast. Bob bringing us in with a Mr. Rogers welcome there. Thank you, Bob. He is celebrating his 18 out of 20 picks for the Oscars this past weekend.
And I just want to stop right here and just say I am no longer, my name is no longer Bob. It is Adele Dazeem.
Okay. All right. Should we have John Travolta introduce you there?
Probably.
I feel like we could
get
him.
Who knows what our name would be if John Travolta introduced us?
Yeah,
all
he's
right.
in charge of that.
Adam. Adam.
Hi, everybody.
Is here.
Hooray.
Myself as well, Iggy, and then saving the best for last.
Of course, always.
The That's wonderful, me. The beautiful, the amazing
the
Aaron.
Perfect. You forgot the perfect.
The perfect.
That's me.
Aaron.
And humble. I feel like we should put humble in there.
All of that is me. That's
awesome.
All me.
So we are Tylerless, at least for the moment.
Does that mean I can actually get a word in?
No, because I'm still here.
Oh.
It just means Iggy can talk more.
Now, I get more time. I don't have to argue with Tyler. And I'm sure 10 to 15 minutes or so, we'll get some nice background noise.
It'll be noticeable.
And then Tyler
yeah.
You'll hear him when he comes
you'll know he's
down
here.
The street.
Maybe some dogs barking. You know, just to make it sound professional, we're going to add that in probably at about the 15-minute mark, so everybody has something to look forward to. But anyways, okay, thank you for that. So Oscars last weekend, we can open with that. As we mentioned, Bob, 18 for 20. Let's go down. So we did our
That's
Oscars
really
picks on the
good.
Last episode. Bob's looking for the paper there. Let's see here. He's got he wants to see the nominees again. But we
tallying
English. There we go.
Tally ho.
Use your words.
Tally ho.
All the
tallying
syllables.
Them up. Aaron finished out of 20 picks. Aaron was 7.
And actually,
that's about as good.
Yeah,
as
and she actually did great because
because she really wasn't listening and just
well, there was like 3 or 4 that you said. Actually didn't even pick. So you actually could.
So
have
you
been
could have been. You could have knocked.
You could have
percentage wise.
People.
Yeah, if we pulled percentages,
well,
you might not be.
I'm still. A little bit better than Chance.
Tyler came in fourth place.
I'm not really surprised because Tyler's good, but I think he took some chances.
He did on American Hustle.
Halfway through, what did he say? Yeah. I stopped voting on what I think will win and voted on what
That's
I
wanted true,
to win. That's
true, because he wanted Jonah Hill just for the sake of being able
just
to say.
Just to be able to say I
two times.
Yeah. Yeah, there were several times where he actually agreed with Bob and said, that's probably going to win, you're right.
And there's a couple times that you were the only one agreed with me.
Let's not take this away from me, though. Let's not take this.
Like, one of your only losses, that was the one that I got right.
Let's not get too excited about Tyler here, because then that takes away from Adam's bronze medal performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
With 9. And my beautiful silver, 10 out of 20, 50%. Hey, I would take that in school, too.
Yeah,
that's
pretty good.
And then, of course, as previously mentioned, Bob's 18 for 20, a 90%. He didn't pitch a perfect game, though. There was,
yeah.
I can't remember the relief pitcher for, is it the Indians? He picked, he tweeted earlier Sunday his predictions. Mm-hmm. He picked out of 18 categories, he picked all 18 correctly. And what was beautiful about it is that the Cleveland Indians were even tweeting throughout the performance as they were counting him down. And they got to about 15 or so, and they're like, okay. All of his teammates are ignoring him and not retweeting him anymore because he's almost about to pitch perfect game. And there was one of his teammates.
No one talks about it. Don't bring it up.
Yeah, one of his teammates was like, when they got to 16, he goes, two outs away, two outs away. So he had the support of the Indians there. It was pretty fun. Overall, though, I thought I was impressed with the Oscars. I really felt Ellen, I think the term we used was humanized it, kind of.
Yeah.
Just brought it to.
Yeah.
She turned it into the Ellen show.
Yeah. And right. Honestly, awesome. It was like, fun.
I mean, I was expecting people to have stuff underneath their seats. So, you know, right. Little freebies and stuff like that.
I'm tired of the schmoozy woozy. What's a hoozy? How many more rhymes can I fit in there? Oscars, where we have Billy Crystal, who I love. I'm just tired of the jokes that are like.
Well, she seemed unscripted.
Scripted.
Yeah,
yeah.
Literally.
It was nice to be unscripted.
A lot of it was ad lib.
ABC News released today, too, the pizza delivery man. really a pizza delivery man.
Yeah.
Not surprised. Yeah. Well, the way he was acting.
No, no, he made a $1,000. He did. He made a $1,000. Ellen gave her gave him another $400.
Seriously.
Gosh. Yeah. She actually during her show today brought him on, and they ordered pizza and they said it was going to be for writers, and they said wait right here, and Ellen came out. He says, I want you to wait here for a moment, and then carry the pizzas in. They carried them in, and he comes out on stage and is like, wow. And hello, and then he started going out, passing out pizza.
Oh, this was at the Oscars, so he had no clue.
He had no clue what was going
on. The look
on
his face. That's when we were watching. Aaron, I think Aaron said, Aaron goes, "No, he's a real delivery man. Look at his face."
Like, no, he looked like he was actually going to pass out.
Yeah,
he was trying to cover up his extreme shock.
When he had a huge crush on Julia Roberts, and he got to serve pizza to Julia Roberts.
Yeah, but who doesn't? I mean,
I know.
Fantastic photos, by the way, after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Fantastic photos after the fact, by the way, of Brad Pitt stuffing his face with pizza.
Yeah.
Great photos. One of my favorite moments, Harrison Ford getting up and taking his time to get a slice. And we are here, and actually...
where's our pizza?
Yeah, Tyler has joined us now. We said, are we at the 15?
No, I don't think we got to 15.
Oh, only 6 minute mark. So we predicted you in at the 15 minute mark, but we got
go do something for 9 minutes.
So Tyler, you don't even need a microphone.
But
what else is new?
So yeah, the pizza delivery. I really felt the pizza delivery skit was really awesome. I know some people complained about it.
It did seem a little long, but it had a great payoff.
I don't care. It was fun.
It had a great payoff.
It was fun. Yeah. The hero montages throughout, they did hero montages.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the Oscars last night. Did you watch, Tyler?
I did not. I caught a little bit of it, but I was busy.
And by the way, you got fourth place.
I figured I would. After I was keeping track of it online as I can real time when I had to stop watching, but my reliance on the old American Hustle to win anything backfired a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, I need Aaron to stop talking.
You prove so.
But the biggest shock I thought was from what I saw, how Gravity swept everything, and then didn't win Best Picture.
Yeah.
There was a lot of there was two things that really gave me when we were watching the show was I was thinking Gravity as it was sweeping through, but everybody was embracing 12 Years a Slave like crazy. Everybody was talking about it at the pre-show. All that, and it really said, well, okay, I think the Academy took this a little bit more seriously than we were thinking they would.
I think the Academy finally was able to sit down and watch a very heavy show.
As crazy as it's going to sound, is like, oh, whatever on this. As soon as Will Smith walked out to announce the Best Picture, I'm like, well, there's your 12 Years of Slave.
It's 12 Years of Slave.
And if it wasn't when he walked out, is when he opened the envelope and he went from ear to ear grin. You knew he wasn't smiling that big for Gravity. He wasn't smiling that big for American Hustle. So
did Bob win?
18 out of 20.
18 out of 20. 20.
Well, I didn't know who was going to win at first. I was like keeping track and I was trying to remember who we picked. And then as soon as I saw...
documentary?
As soon as I saw 20 Feet from Stardom, I was like, Bob's going to win now.
I texted him.
He had the beat on this one.
I texted him right after. I said, it's bullshit.
he was on that one. So
I was gloating.
Imagine that. Because you definitely went against the grain on that one.
The respond text I got went read along the lines of, never bet against me. Ha, 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 ha.
So 18 of 20. What was second place?
10 out of 20.
Jeez.
Yeah. 9.
And I was probably
eight.
What,
eight.
Eight.
Seven.
Eight.
And then Aaron, 7.
Oh, so I beat Aaron?
Yeah.
That's all right. Then.
But Aaron, you know, you're making fun of her, but before you came in here, she defended you. Her and Bob brought up to discount our second and third place here and said, well, about halfway, Aaron goes, about halfway, Tyler did start saying, well, yeah, Bob's probably right on this one, but I'm going to pick this just because I want to win. So she was giving you some credit.
We were having fun there for a little bit, but then towards the second end of my picks, I just started picking who I
wanted
to win.
You went from the will win to the should win.
Let's go back here, though. It's on tape. I was not the one who defended Tyler. That was somebody else who brought that up.
But no, I definitely switched.
Oh, now because he's here, you're not going to own that.
I definitely wanted... I was really – the only thing that I was a little bit disappointed about, other than American Hustle winning practically nothing, was I really wanted something that had to do with Nebraska to win. I really thought they had a shot at screenplay.
Yeah.
I wanted them to win something.
I my disappointment honestly was documentary. The track record that Act of Killing went in, everything about that movie, that just what it is doing, what it's winning, and the fact that we have such a good relationship with Draft House and we love it, at least I love it as much. But it would have been awesome to say, hey, two and a half years as a film, as a label, and they got the American rights for it and released it, and would have had a Academy Award winning documentary. Would have been pretty cool.
And here's my problem. Here was my problem with that movie. Yeah, it went through the critics awards and just swept everything. But that is not a pleasant movie to watch.
But is 12 Years a Slave a pleasant movie?
No, but I mean, it 12 Years a Slave is a very respectable film. This documentary, it felt very uncomfortable. I didn't like the glamorization of people who killed millions of people, men, women, and children. I just did not feel comfortable, and I think the Academy voters didn't feel comfortable watching that either.
Makes sense. I'm glad that Aaron's the one replying for all this with no microphone.
Clearly, because Bob is the Academy, he's got like some Harry Potter Voldemort mind meld connection going on. I don't know.
Really, Harry Potter Voldemort mind meld connection,
but
mind
that's
meld.
What's going on.
She just said, and she threw in mind meld in there too. Okay, but, thank you, Obama.
There was some really good stuff. I mean, the Academy's. I tell you one thing that the Oscars this year brought up for me that I hadn't really thought about a whole lot in the last year. Was the death of Roger Ebert, because he loved the Oscars, and every year he would do his outpick Roger, where on his website you could put him, and if you did better than him, you could win a prize. And I always really enjoyed doing that, and him talking about the Oscars was always fun. He would live tweet them.
I loved
this
watching
year,
his
live tweets during the Oscars and his picks and stuff. And then this year, like, I thought about it, and I thought about it and like went to the website, and his wife Chaz had been tweeting about it and stuff, because I still have his Twitter on mine. But it brought it back home that, like, wow, that guy's not here anymore.
It was definitely the in memorandum was a large, it felt like a pretty powerful list this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, and one thing I was really glad, because usually that segment it just turns into the death-o-meter. You know, who's going to get the most claps? And they kind of finally got everybody to say, you know, don't clap. Just
and
let it just go.
And then it rolled straight into Bette Midler.
And then Bette Midler sings
that
damn
part,
song.
Like, usually it's just a list, but usually there's some that's really, you know, pointed out big.
Well, that's the thing. They didn't, and that's what Bob's kind of saying. It kind of felt all, and they mixed the big names throughout it. They, of course, closed with Hoffman, you know, at the recent, but they mixed.
Did Ebert get a toss up?
Yes,
Ebert,
he did.
Ebert was about midway
Walker.
Through, but I mean, you opened. You opened with the big name. I can't even remember.
Yeah, James Gandolfini was the
James
first.
James Gandolfini.
Oh, yeah, James Gandolfini.
And then you had Shirley Temple Black. You had Roger Ebert. You had Peter O'Toole. You had so many big
tough
names
year.
Through
it's,
there
yeah.
that were
you
just.
You know, it's just amazing how many people we lost this year. It's just unbelievable.
On the brighter side of things, I think my highlights for the night was definitely opening up with Jared Leto.
What a speech.
And definitely deserved it. Oh, the speech, fantastic. But he deserved every bit of it. That high point set the tone. Like we were talking about earlier, Ellen did a fantastic job of just humanizing it, just bringing it to this was just a laid back. It felt more Golden Globes.
She broke Twitter.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. That tweet was hysterical.
I did love the selfie tweet. It was fantastic. But the other highlight in that, as much as I was predicting and I wanted Gravity, seeing Steve McQueen make his speech after 12 Years of Slave 1, and then he walks away from the microphone and starts jumping up and down like a little kid, and then jumps into the arms of one of the producers, was just absolute. And as we were saying, that's the one thing I will – is Bob will sit here and brag about his 18 and 20. That when we were predicting, the one thing I said is I say Gravity. I want Steve McQueen to win something so bad because I think he's so great. So it as much as I felt Gravity was the best movie of the year, like seeing him react like that, I was like it's well-deserved. His three recent movies just so powerful – hard, just strong movies. So it's really good to see him win.
Yeah,
I haven't looked up stats on it, but how? I mean, I know that it's happened more often recently, especially with the expansion of the Best Picture field. But used to it. Never happened. Like, how often do different movies get Best Director slash
the split.
Best Picture? That doesn't get that split it's, isn't common.
No, I mean, that's true.
It's happened a lot more in recent years than it had in the past. But used to, that was a guarantee. Best Picture, Best Director was Best Picture almost every time.
And I'm going to go back. I'm going to take a step back because I did say earlier with the word joking about Will Smith presenting and 12 Years Later. But it was, I did feel as a back and forth night because we just talked about a few things that reminded me because I thought 12 Years a Slave was embraced early, saw it, and then Gravity starts sweeping through the awards, and you're like, wow. And then all of a sudden, you talk about The Act of Killing doesn't win Best Documentary. And I said, well, if this doesn't win Best Documentary, there's no way 12 Years a Slave is winning Best Picture because it's a hard movie. And then you get to the point with Best Director. And so, yeah, I think at the beginning I was like, oh, well, maybe it's going to be 12 Years a Slave because they're focusing on it, all this tension. And then it's just build up for Gravity. And then, yeah, Will Smith's grin. And it's like, all right.
But the one
I will high-five Aaron for, though, that I did not think was ever going to happen was Great Gatsby.
Gatsby.
Winning for costumes.
Gatsby won both that they were up.
Did not see that happening.
That was my other
thing. She hates Baz Luhrmann's Moulin Rouge, which is fantastic.
I need to watch that again.
Yeah, Aaron, you're not allowed to return dialogue if you do not have a microphone because we're doing this for our listeners. All three of them.
I completely had forgotten that Catherine Martin, who won for costumes and for production design, that she did both, and two, she's Baz Luhrmann's wife.
Yes, yeah.
That kind of I forgot best, about that from Moulin Rouge.
Best bit of trivia, though, was Gentleman, who won Best Score for Gravity. The previous two movies he scored was Attack of the Block and The World's End.
Really?
Yes. What's his name?
Edgar Wright?
Yes, thank you. Edgar Wright tweeted that trivia last night.
Really?
Last two movies, and then he gets invited to score Gravity, and he goes, those are the only three movies he's ever scored, by the way.
Really? Attack the Block and World's End.
Wow. World's End and Gravity, and now he's an Academy Award winner.
So I scored an Edgar Wright movie and a low-budget indie British flick and then Gravity.
And got an award for it.
Right.
All right.
I think he's going to get paid a lot more from now on. I'm just going to throw that out there.
So we won't, unless anybody else has some closing remarks on the Oscars, we won't spend too much time on it because we did promise Tyler he would get some book time.
Yeah.
Bob, did you want to gloat any on your 18 for 20? Or
What were your two misses? I need to know that now.
Best Picture.
Wow. Okay. Obviously.
And costume design.
Yeah. Because
who else?
Aaron's the only one who picked Gatsby.
You kind of drew me into the
'70s American Hustle.
Tyler did sell the hell out of that pick though, because I went with him on that as well.
I production design and costumes. I thought like that if they weren't going to win anything else, they would at least get one of those two, just because they did such a good job of really.
Okay, but all that stuff is still on the shelves of, like, every single store right now. Like, you tried
not,
to make
not
the argument
it's the 80s
that
now.
It was total, like, oh, yeah, but they actually recreated
they didn't
it.
Really
they didn't make it modern.
There's a
at
difference
all.
Between.
No, all that stuff is totally stylish right now. You could say that the makeup artists and the hairstylists really, you know, they're the ones who pulled it off in the end.
But I just have two little things to say, and then I'm going to shut up about
kill me
them
with
when the Oscars are over. Is I think there are two big winners. Like I said, you know, 12 Years a Slave got the big prize, but Gravity got like 7 awards, including Best Picture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's 6 one way, half dozen the other. The other thing is, for me, best win of the night, Lupita Nyong'o. She looked absolutely gorgeous, and she had such an incredible speech. It was very.
I'm a little upset that I don't get to refer to Jonah Hill as an Academy Award winner yet. I'm sure it's going to happen.
Ellen did make jokes about Jonah Hill in that one scene.
He goes, in your movie, you showed me something that I haven't seen in a long time. And then she sat there for a second, and she goes, y'all get it, right? all right. So out of the award season now, it was a good close of the award season. I thought it was a really strong award season, too, which is something I haven't been able to say in a while. A lot of good movies, which has been something to say in a while. We always knock the big blockbusters because you know, those big movies, The Lone Ranger and stuff like that, that get attention. But but really, and it was...
And they showed that making up for during the Visual Effects Award last night. And I go, and that got nominated.
Yeah,
oh,
but
geez.
It's...
Gosh.
Either way,
Disney's got some clout.
Yeah. Either way, it's, you know, it was a good year for movies because there's so many movies that didn't even get a single nomination. The Butler, Don Juan,
Don John, sorry.
So good. And
Don John, like, is, I mean, it was really good, but it also, like, it is the definition of mixed response.
Yeah.
Because for every review I read that said it was fantastic, I read just as many that just hated everything about it. So.
Yeah. And not only that,
I feel like they should create an award, though, specifically for Joseph Gordon-Levitt for, I don't know what you call it, like, you know, well done, sir, where you write and direct a movie and then cast Scarlett Johansson as your girlfriend. Like, there needs to be an award for that.
And he gets it at the Governor's Award.
Agreed, just, yeah.
And one more thing. Like I said, American Hustle, skunked. It was the...
To be fair, though, it did do really well at the Golden Globe, so it did okay for itself when it's all said and done.
But
yeah. And,
like the second most nominated film that didn't win anything.
Yeah.
First was Color Purple.
Yeah. It and Wolf of Wall Street both, but, I mean, they've gotten better recently, but when it's all said and done, like, one thing that people tend to forget is it doesn't really matter how good it is, as long if your movie can in any way be considered a quote-unquote comedy... It's chance that the Oscars are not good.
You got issues. You know? Yeah.
So David O. Russell, 0-3 in 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, he'll get there.
That's still pretty impressive.
He's still doing all right.
Yeah. The fact that he's 0-3.
Right, the fact that he's
three for three
in nominations in three consecutive years. I mean, I'll take it. I'd take that career.
Yeah. All right. So moving on out of award season, out of movies, although we do have
just for a little
bit.
Yeah,
I know
probably.
We have the blockbusters coming up. you know, we'll focus, I guess we'll do our convention preview next week or something. We can do that, but we'll let Tyler introduce us into.
I mean, I'm excited about Kansas City. It's only 2 weeks away.
I know. Let's talk a little books.
I'm pumped about the late night show of Serenity. At the
we can go on that. So,
I'm pumped about that.
All right. So Tyler, you mentioned at the end of the last episode, you brought up a few novels.
I read a couple
out.
Books recently that I is anyone else reading right now? You still?
We went over this.
Man?
Still on Dresden Files.
Where are you at right now?
He pays no attention to what anybody else says about books.
About 50 or 60% through book four.
Okay.
So Summer Night?
Death Mat? No, Summer Night. You're right. Yeah, fourth is Summer Night. Summer Night's fun.
Yeah.
For those of you not aware, I've gotten Adam onto The Dresden Files by Jim Butcher.
Bragging.
What's that?
Bragging.
They should be aware. If they're listening to this, go back and listen to the first one.
Go back, pick one up. It's the first game in the series called Stormfront.
Mm-hmm.
The main character's name is Harry Dresden, Harry Blackstone Copperfield Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
He is a professional wizard based out of Chicago. He's the only wizard in the Yellow Pages. But it's a fun mix of, you know, first person, detective, almost like noir sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, he works in Chicago and deals with the police and crime lords and stuff, but at the same time, he deals with vampires and werewolves and fairies and the wizarding world. It's fantastic.
Oh, my.
Right. The universe, the environment that Butcher creates and the situations that he puts Dresden in, the reactions that Dresden has to those situations with his unfailingly...
He's fairly upbeat and self-deprecating. He is
it's fantastic.
He is the wizard John McClane, you know, in Chicago. Like, he takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
No, I was reading, which one was it? Either the beginning of Grave Peril or Summer Night, where he's just been beat to absolute hell.
Yeah. And it just gets, and a lot of authors, it's true of most authors, but one thing I will say about Dresden Files is, and you're starting to see it, it only gets better here. Is the first book is good and fun, but by the time you get to book 7, 8, 9, his writing gets so much better and the characters get so much more developed. Like Harry Dresden, every character in the series, like even side characters, their development is fun. And you get a lot of characters coming back. You get a lot of decisions that he makes in earlier books come back to haunt him later on. Like some really amazing stuff goes on. He also wrote another series while he was writing The Dresden Files called Codex Alera. That's this... takes place in this weird kind of like very Roman, like Roman Empire inspired, like fantasy land. And it's really fun. That one starts with Furies of Calderon is the first book. It's a 5-book series. It's complete now. It's over, but right. It was really fun. Anyway, books that I found recently that I really enjoyed, I wanted to throw out there were, there was this small little self-published sci-fi book, called The Martian that was a guy named Andy Weir wrote. He self-published it, like put it up on like Amazon and stuff like mm-hmm, that digitally. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of people got really excited about it. And it ended up making a deal and has now sold it and is now being, it's been now published by a big publishing house.
Nice.
Premise of it, the main character is a astronaut who is the fifth member of a 5-man team who go to Mars, and they are the third manned mission to Mars. So there's already been 2 successful missions to Mars. His one goes, and it's basically, the entire story is told mostly through his own personal logs that he's made while he's there, and basically within X number of days of the mission starting, something horrifically goes bad. They have to abort the mission. An accident happened that basically makes his entire crew believe that he is dead. They get in the spaceship, take off, head back to Earth, which is like a 2-year trip, and he wakes up unconscious on the Martian planet, left alone. And it's this weird, like, I don't know, like Castaway set on Mars, but they don't send morons to Mars. He's a mechanical engineer / botanist. Right. Cause they don't, yeah. I mean, they spend smart people to Mars, and it's basically him.
Does he have a volleyball?
He doesn't, but it's basically him MacGyvering his way to survive alone on Mars for,
wow.
And it's fantastic. But the fun thing about
good
it is
sci-fi though.
It's that's the other thing about it. The
sounds
guy
like
who made
movie.
It, the guy who wrote the book, and you can read interviews. He went into a lot of work to make it as realistic as possible. He did the math on how many calories he would need to survive, how much water, how much air. And a lot of, and while some of the science may not be completely real, it feels real. Like you read it, you feel like the things he is doing, the things he's doing are fun. And he's a funny, offbeat, kind of upbeat guy. I mean, the book, you know, I was on board when I read the first thing, and it just basically the opening line of the book, it's like date, whatever log. And it basically subs, well, I'm pretty much fucked. Like, that's how the book opens and goes from there, and it's a lot of fun. The other one I read recently that's been getting a lot.
What's the title of that one again?
The Martian.
By?
Andy Weir.
Okay.
Fun book. And then another one that just came out this last month. Picked it up. It was getting a lot of reviews, a lot of exciting reviews. It's called Red Rising, and it's the first book in what is eventually supposed to be a trilogy called the Red Rising Trilogy. I got drawn to, I mean, I shouldn't say drawn to it, but like a lot of the reviews were calling out that this was the next, you know, Hunger Games, the next Ender's Game. Like I can't tell you how many reviews I read that compared the main character, Darrow, to Katniss and Ender. Like that was,
okay.
If those two things intrigue you and make you want to read the book, by all means, go read it. If those two things turn you off, don't let them, because while those do, like, those are the two best popular analogs I can find to this story and this character, it does it a disservice because there's so much more going on in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly enough, also takes place on Mars, but for completely different reasons. I usually am more of a fantasy guy. I've been on a big sci-fi kick. This one is, I mean, it's a really, really good book. It's tough to explain the premise of it without, you know, spoiling some of what's going to go on, but basically a guy lives in a futuristic society that's dystopian at best, and he is there's these caste systems, and he's in basically what would be equivalent of the lowest caste, and it's mm-hmm. his fight against the golds. He's a red, and everyone has colors,
and he volunteers tribute.
Not exactly. Not exactly. It's a little bit, it's significantly more, it's a little bit darker. I mean, not that Hunger Games is bright by any means, but there's some definitely some things in this that it's a little bit more visceral, a little bit darker. Also,
no battle
there's
royale.
Significantly more. There's significantly more sci-fi-ness to it,
right.
But not in an overpowering way. It's still a lot. I mean, there's definitely scenes that almost harken back to like a Lord of the Flies kind of thing with people. Okay. You know what happens in a, you know, an unsupervised situation where they have to.
So give us the title and author again.
Red Rising. Red Rising Trilogy Number 1 by Pierce Brown.
Okay.
And then the last thing I'll throw out there for those of you who aren't already aware, by the time this posts, it will have been published, but tomorrow on Tuesday, book 2 of the Stormlight Archives by Brandon Sanderson comes out, called Words of Radiance.
Well, thank you for letting our audience know we're recording on Monday.
They've no. We do this every week. Like, you just talked about how the Oscars were last night.
I'm giving you a hard time. I said last weekend.
Did you really say last weekend?
I said this past weekend.
This past weekend. Uh-huh. For those of you, I mean, if you read much in the fantasy, genre, you probably have heard of Brandon Sanderson. He's really popular for the Mistborn trilogy. He also has written some other standalone books like Warbreaker, Elantris. He did an outrigger in the Mistborn trilogy called Alloy of Law. Most recently, he wrote two young adult novels, one, The Rhythmatist, which was really good, and Steelheart, which basically is a slightly futuristic, I mean, very in the very near future, where basically an event happens and basically turns people into superheroes. But
awesome.
They're all basically bad. Like, they basically become tyrants and take over the world, and it's him as a normal fighting against these. It's really, I mean, you guys, I think everyone in this room would enjoy the book Steelheart. Fantastic.
Yeah.
If you haven't read any of his personal stuff, Brandon Sanderson is also famous as the guy who was selected to finish Wheel of Time after Robert Jordan died. So mm-hmm. he wrote the last three books with Robert Jordan's notes and finished the Wheel of Time series, which just completed last year after, God, the first one came out almost 20 years ago. I know that I figured it out from the time I picked up book one, Wheel of Time, and finished the last one. It was 13 years for me to finish that series.
Wow.
It definitely dragged. There was a dip in the middle in quality in Wheel of Time, but it's still one of the biggest, like, epic fantasy achievements of the last, you know, I mean, there's not been many things that get close to what Wheel of Time accomplished when it comes from that story being told from beginning to the number of characters, the development. Anyway, he started a new series 2 years ago, I believe, that is going to be his own epic fantasy series mm-hmm. called The Stormlight Archives. The first book was called Way of Kings, and it was fantastic. And it was, well over 1,000 pages long, and I devoured it.
Good grief.
But it was book one of what is what he says is eventually going to be 10 books. Second one comes out tomorrow. Super excited about it. I have to work tomorrow, but I have Wednesday and Thursday off, so that's pretty much all I'm going to do, probably, is read that book. What else is going on?
I'm reading now. I'm reading something.
What are you reading?
Graphic novel.
Okay.
And it's graphic. So it intrigued me. In the fall, we did a post, kind of a news post, about a new graphic novel from Image Comics, which I'm sure, Tyler, you're aware of, called Sex, Summer of Hard. And it's
fun.
What intrigued me was that it was by Joe Casey, is the writer. And I'm like, wait a second, Joe Casey, this is the guy that my son interviewed and talk to, like, every time we go to convention, because they're there for Man of Action. Ben 10, the Amazing Spider-Man? Is that the cartoon they're doing? Or the Ultimate Spider-Man? I can't remember which one.
I believe it's Ultimate Spider-Man.
Is Ultimate. He is well-known for writing with Man of Action Studios for, I mean, children's cartoons. So the fact that he was doing an Image Comics titled Sex,
I'm going to go ahead and
rated mature.
I'm going to go ahead and say from the title and from Image that not something you're going to let your son read.
No, definitely not.
Not yet.
The concept, great. Picture, basically, it's this will actually sound familiar. We're in Saturn City, but it's a Gotham City. This billionaire returns. He's a former vigilante. Something happened. They've set the tone for something happened. You don't quite know what it is. Somebody died. You don't know who it was to him. But so he left it. He left the city for like 8 months, and now he's coming back to his empire, and other people are running his stuff. So it's basically take Batman, and he's left the world of being Batman, and he's trying to become Bruce Wayne again.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of sexual content in it too. So
I would hope with the title like that.
So it's not just a clever name. Okay. It's good to know.
It's a good start. It's a strong start. It really sets that tone. Definitely huge inspiration is Batman and mm-hmm. Bruce Wayne. I mean, that character is Bruce Wayne. So very much just taking it to that rated R level and that mix. Cause I'm really just rewatching, which I'll have to conform with what Tyler said here a long time ago, but I'll agree with you in here in a second. Rewatching The Dark Knight Returns. I watched the animated one here recently again, and then reading this, that whole series. But I guess to bring that full circle of what I was going to say, agreeing with Tyler. So Tyler's always said The Dark Knight Returns is the best Batman graphic novel.
Have I said that?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that sounds like something I would say. It's tough for me
on the podcast.
So many good.
But I've always argued you because I've always argued Killing Joke.
I do love Killing Joke.
Is the best. But revisiting again, The Dark Knight Returns. I don't know. I think it's probably the best. It is Frank Miller's telling of the aged Batman and. And the Joker is just...
Oh,
the
Joker's so good about
it. He is what you imagine the Joker to be in that, so I don't know.
Just that sequence of panels where they show that Batman's returned on television, and they just show, like...
About,
it's almost 20 panels of just Joker's face in his cell watching the television, and each panel, because he's been in his cell, because Batman's been gone, he's been in his cell, and he doesn't smile. Like he's not smiling.
Right, morose.
He's morose at best, and Batman has to return to fight off these mutants. And there's a page that's almost entirely filled with panels of just the Joker's face as the news report of Batman's return, and in each one, the smirk just slowly appears, and the corners of the mouth just kind of go up, and it goes from like panel one, like top left. To the lat, like what I don't know how many it is. I'm probably exaggerating in my head how
it's
many
like
panels they show,
or so,
but it's quite a few. To the bottom right with the full on rictus, you know, Joker grin, and then all hell breaks.
Right. Whenever I
there.
See that, even in a graphic novel, whenever I see the picture of the Joker with that smile, I hear Mark Hamill laughing in my head.
Cackling. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's flawless Joker because he gets out to go do an interview on a series, and he's asking the show host. He goes, "Oh, are these mugs for the guests? Do we get to keep them?" And they're like, "Yeah, sure, you can have it." And he goes, "Good, wouldn't want it to go to waste." And he breaks it on the edge of the desk and then just stabs his psychiatrist with it. And it's like, okay, this escalated.
Exactly. That is the quintessential that escalated quickly.
Yes. So Bob, any reading recently since we've...
He couldn't have read. He watched all of those movies.
Yes,
exactly.
Watched a lot of movies.
What's a book?
What's a book?
It's like a movie, Bob, except you have to play the acting out in your mind.
Pictures in your head.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Aaron, you read anything?
Nope.
Thanks for that pause.
Dramatic pause. I like it. It could have been something great. We didn't know.
I was
excited.
So we are in March. We're going to skip over here to video games now. March is a big month for video games. We do. You get a first peek, basically, at the new engine with Metal Gear Solid.
Oh my gosh!
I was waiting for
the Fox engine.
There.
Are you kidding me?
Stick of Truth tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's big.
People
have been waiting for that game for quite some time.
Yeah.
Years.
I don't think it's gonna blow anybody away with graphics, though. But
it's South Park. It doesn't.
You don't need it to.
It just needs to be.
I'm gonna buy that game. It looks good.
A feature on it, and they said, you know, people would look at it and they thought they were actually watching an episode.
Yeah.
Developers
came in.
No PS4 for
that. Knew they were building.
No.
Just Xbox One.
Well, they started making that game. God, it's been, that game's been in development for the better part of, like,
it feels like
three,
forever.
4 years.
Yeah, I think four is probably accurate.
So you have that one. You also have Titanfall this month, which I think will single-handedly keep Xbox units moving this month because that game.
Well, did you see they're giving it away free with?
Yeah, they need something. They've got a Titanfall bundle for this.
The day it comes out, you can buy the Xbox One with it bundled because they're not shipping as. I mean, they're shipping a ton. Obviously, they're not. Microsoft is by no means hurting, but the price point has thrown. Yeah. I mean, you can't keep a PS4 on the shelf, and there's always Xbox Ones to be had. But the Titanfall is definitely going to drive those units.
That'll help.
Have they talked about dropping the price on it?
It's going
to
be a little.
It dropped in Europe already.
Yeah, it's already dropped to the
dropped
same 50, price.
50,
as
it dropped in Europe PS4. To about 400. I think it was like 420 is the equivalent of.
Well, and I think they could have done a good. I think they could have sold it at the price they had it at. I mean, I feel like they should have learned from how poorly the PS3 did versus the 360, based strictly on power. I mean, on price point. But the Xbox has something that the PS4 doesn't in the whole Kinect thing. The problem is. Is even at their, I mean, they had trade shows, they had so much chance to, like, really pitch the Xbox One to people. Like, they had their presentations, they had their meetings, stuff like that, and they never really did a good job of explaining what this new Kinect does and how much better it is. And people see, I had to pay an extra $100 for that camera. Everyone I know who's bought an Xbox One and uses the Kinect thinks it's the greatest thing that's ever happened, but... Yeah. They didn't do a good job of explaining to people, like, no. Like, it's not the old Kinect. Like, it does all these amazing things, and it does
them
really well.
Yeah, they shot themselves in the foot.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. And then what? Got one more. I feel like there's one more big game here in March too. Well, I know Infamous got its
Second Son,
but that's I don't feel like that's the one I'm thinking about. I thought there was another big title, but I think
That's going to drive. I mean, it's going to bump up even what is already not. Already a huge demand for PS4s
right.
anymore. Because that's the other thing that's surprising about how many PS4s have sold is the sheer, you know, complete dearth of like titles that open. Like,
right.
There was nothing to play.
Buy
on
a PS4 and get all of the games you just bought on your PS3.
Yeah, exactly.
With better graphics
and knack.
Right.
You know, because all the big ones like Second Son, like Drive Club, all got pushed back.
Drive Club this month? I don't know. It's hard to keep track because they all have changed dates. So
I
knew
mean,
all the dates
PS4
at one
titles.
Time,
the fact that
they've
been able to sell as many PS4s as they have with nothing that's really exclusive and must own.
And just opening and just starting to sell in Japan middle of last month.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another crazy thing. They were beating Xbox numbers.
Second Son's
going to
be the first of anything that people are like, got to have that. And so can only play it on the PS4.
Adam did a post for the numbers,
mm-hmm.
I guess,
yeah.
for the systems.
Yeah, yeah. Through February 8th, which was the week before they started selling the PS4 in Japan, PS4 reported 5.3 million units sold. So units sold out the door, money's in for those. And Xbox released numbers at the same time that were for units shipped through December 31st, and it was like 3.9 million units shipped.
I did not think it was that big of a gap.
Well, I think
that's Xbox not sold. That's
right,
shipped.
That's shipped. But you got about an extra month there for the PlayStation numbers, so you figure, okay, after the holiday season, Xbox probably sold some more units and stuff
extra
like that.
Extra month in the terms of their numbers were not...
Right, it was December 31st through February 8th. So okay. Xbox reported through end of year, PlayStation reported through before we started selling in Japan.
Okay.
So, but looking at those numbers, it makes it really hard to tell who's really winning. But when you consider PlayStation hadn't started selling in Japan yet, you figure there's going to be a huge bump.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sometime later this month, we'll see the probably end of March, you get
and
the first quarter numbers for PlayStation. That'll include selling in Japan.
I'm trying
and,
to
well,
remember
include
now.
Titanfall, probably. Too.
Yeah, and it'll include Titanfall
it,
numbers
having
for
been
Xbox.
At both midnight
yeah.
releases, they were a week apart. Who was it? Xbox then PS4?
No, PlayStation came out first this time
PS4
around.
Then
yeah,
Xbox One.
Yep.
Because it was those two plus. Black Ops
and then Black
2
Ops
were all
yeah,
in a three-week
right there,
span,
yeah. mm-hmm.
one after another, so.
So, Bob, how far are you in Tomb Raider?
Gosh, how far am I? I think I'm like 31% into it.
Any other games?
It's about where I got to.
Have
you played Outlast?
No, I have not.
Oh, my gosh.
Is that the one that we downloaded?
Terrifying. That game is terrifying.
So, with the PlayStation
Outlast
Plus.
Outlast the one made by the same guys who did Amnesia, or is it like it's that same sort of thing? Is
yeah,
it?
The same style of game as Amnesia. I don't know if it's the same.
If you have PlayStation Plus, people. It's a free download,
okay.
right? Until well, probably by the time this comes out, the store will have updated, and you'll have the March ones that are free.
Okay, so you get March free ones.
If you have a PS3, pretty exciting. We did mention Tomb Raider, PS3, the new Tomb Raider will be free if you have PlayStation Plus.
What?
Yeah, so I'm going to download that on my PS3 because I got hooked on the PS4.
I might do that too then.
Just
so I have it on both.
Right, you've got it. You yeah. already own the game.
I have
yet
to buy either of the new systems.
It's a free download. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah, I've yet to buy either of the new systems. I've been playing some older games because I have a lot of games on my shelf that are unfinished from the last year and a half.
Understandable.
But the game that I have played more in the last week, and I kind of did it first as a joke, but it had been so long since I played the game. And if you've watched our Twitch channel, I've streamed it for a little while the other day, but I went and broke out my copy of Thief from 1998
nice.
Because of the new one that came out. And I just remember buying that game and just being blown away with it.
Right.
Graphics obviously do not hold up. That game is still awesome.
Right. Fun
Thief,
game. A fun game is
Thief,
a fun game.
Thief the yeah. Dark Project is, I mean, people forget, like, I mean, it's been, what, 15 years since that game came out. It was a game changer. It was a first-person game in the mm-hmm. age of Half-Life and stuff. That didn't have guns or shooting or action. It was real stealth. I mean, it was Splinter Cell and all those kinds of games before there was a Splinter Cell.
Right.
And it used amazing AI, the shadows, the sound, the surfaces. I've legitimately been playing it for the last like 3 or 4 nights straight and had forgotten how awesome that game was.
So we've
looks
lost.
Terrible, but
so Tyler's not going to get his book record this year because
keep,
he's played
keep
too
twitching.
Much Steve.
Keep twitching that. We want to see that.
I'm still fine. I'm my book. I got a.
I was just joking.
I got a good
Remember
jump on
he
it.
Walks to work reading. So.
That's right. I was just.
I haven't done that in a while.
He's got a car now. He's driving.
I had a great day. I was just getting some exercise.
We grabbed. We picked up Marvel's Lego's Marvel Universe for PlayStation 4.
Played that yet?
Yeah, Ryan and I gave it a go. So played it with the kid. He loved it.
That was a hard game to get your hands on when it came out.
Yeah.
Now, I picked it up third party on Amazon. Got it cheap. We picked up I almost pre-ordered Thief, and then I started hearing mixed things about it, so I went ahead and did the pre-order for Infamous and picked up that one.
Thief is kind of confusing to me because obviously they've dumbed down, like, they've dumbed it down from the original PC games,
right,
as far as, like, how hard it is and the kind of things you have to do. But while very few of the reviews have been very good, everyone I've talked to who's played it has really liked it. So
yeah.
I don't know.
I
guess if you're a Thief purist, maybe not. But.
Eve Beauregard was not looking forward to it because she's a Thief purist, and she's said some good things about it, so I don't know. I haven't cracked open Killzone yet. That may be Wednesday night. I may Twitch.
Have you played the other Killzone
Aaron
games?
Aaron sit with me. Yeah, I've only played the first one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got the first one. That was back in my Best Buy days, and they'd give us the games for free. Or no, it wasn't the second one.
Yeah.
Because they gave us the second one for free, and felt like I get, because then I passed it on to like Kanan or somebody afterwards.
Definitely the one PlayStation exclusive series I've never played. I don't know why. I never played Killzone 1. Because I didn't play that, I never bought any of the sequels.
Yeah, I played the second one, and it's just like, I mean, it's a Halo. It's a Call of Duty. It's that same thing.
I mean, I played
third person, though.
Played every single, you know, God of War.
Yeah,
single Uncharted.
Right.
But played all the Infamouses, but just never. Like, I don't know, Killzone, just, I don't know, maybe it was just an overload of that period of time of first-person sci-fi shooters. But
well, yeah, and you had, it seemed like
it was supposed to be the Halo
head-to-head against
Halos
and Mass Effect.
Mass Effect and Halo.
And I'd rather play Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from a story perspective, it never had that get me in and get me into a story. It was always just like a Halo, except without the being Halo, so I don't
know. So, speaking of it, we'll do a quick little plug. Twitch.tv/ProjectNerd blog, or you can just go to projectnerd.com/Twitch. Pick us up. Watch us streaming some games. So, as Tyler mentioned, he streamed some classic Thief there. We've had Brandon streaming number of times.
Did you watch when he was doing that the Ghostbuster game?
Oh, yeah.
He
paid some tribute. He paid some tribute to Mr.
Is that the old Ghostbuster game?
Yeah.
I bought that the day it came out just because they had got everyone back to play the voices.
Mm-hmm. Well, and do the story and everything, too.
Yeah.
Right,
sorry. I bought that the day it came out for, I think, my PS3. I never quite finished the game. It's not great, but it's super fun.
Yeah, he's showing it on the PC, and it was great. Yeah.
The sequence where you fight the Marshmallow Man, like you re-basically do that fight, it's fun. It's not good.
Well,
the game, there's nothing about the game that's like, this is a great game. But as a guy who's seen the movies, God knows how many times, and watched the cartoon and stuff, it's so much fun to play.
Right.
No, he gave it a go. He gave some other classic games a go. It's going to be hard to keep Brandon off the Twitch, to be honest.
I think he's
fallen in love with it for sure. So we do, like I said, streaming multiple times throughout the week. Our guarantee is a minimum of 3 to 4 times a week, every Friday afternoon for sure. And then as things settle down with the conventions and more specifically the convention planning, I believe this crew right here, at least the majority of us rotating night, some night each weekend we'll do the game cast. So the Nerdcast crew will come out, we'll set up the camera, get the crew on the couch, maybe plug some stuff.
Yeah, you can listen to us make fun
going.
Of each other while we play video games.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
so
going to be a good time.
But right. Play video games.
I just
that's going to be a good time.
Keep streaming old PC games that I've been digging out of the closet. I'll do Quest
Please.
For Glory next.
Yeah. There you go.
There's some good ones out there. What about, we need to get.
Do you think they'll hook
I
up
almost,
some Wolf? We need to get some Wolfenstein 3D.
Oh, I almost
because they're working on a new one.
I almost streamed.
About that.
I mean, everyone's been playing it, and it's been around for a little. It's not old, but it's. It's got an aesthetic that's old. I almost streamed some FTL the other night.
Ooh,
I don't know how
yeah.
much people.
I was
going to
say, can we hook up the iPad so Aaron can stream some Plants vs. Zombies?
I don't know how many people would want to just watch.
We can get her on that new PVZ. I'm telling you.
If I play FTL, I definitely can't use the mic or anything because it would just be me cursing profusely. Over.
Well, I mean, that's the great thing about FTL.
My guess is a bigger crowd then.
You could get through a whole thing, like a whole series, because it's not a very long game. I mean, you can knock it out in a couple hours.
Well, I mean,
you get pretty far in it at least.
Well,
because
that's
hours,
the thing.
And,
like when you
and
play
then
the
you
game,
screw
like,
up and you
have
curse
to, I
uncontrollably.
Mean,
yeah,
I mean, maybe especially if I'm playing on normal mode, maybe 1 out of 10 playthroughs do I even make it to like the last sector?
Yeah,
because
right.
it's just death after death after death after death. You know, and then you get to those points, sometimes you're just like, frick it, just open all the airlocks and suck everybody out into space.
Right,
and
yeah. You gotta be okay to die. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Could y'all, I was trying to think as y'all were talking about that, I'm trying to think, what would be my favorite game I ever played? And it's like, can you pick just one game? That's, Adam's shaking his head yes, so what is it?
Assassin's Creed something?
No, it would be Metal Gear Solid 3.
Really?
Snake Eater.
Okay.
Everything about that game, they've got the, you play through a little bit of an opening, and then it gets to the opening credits, and they go full on James Bond with it, because it's set in that right time period, just after World War II, you're at the start of the Cold War, and so they do a full James Bond opening sequence with the over the top musical and like the snake crawling through girls and stuff like that. I mean, it's totally fantastic. And the game itself is just really, really, really good.
It would, it'd be hard for me to pick because my nostalgic factor really leans towards Halo and Halo 2 because it was right at the right time when I got the Xbox. We were playing it across when I was in the dorm rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So we were networking everything. So the game that the really, to be honest, the game that, Halo wasn't a terrible story for a game and single player,
right,
but it wasn't great. And Halo 2 was a rush job, but the multiplayer was what I enjoyed. So
I really enjoyed the single player campaign in Halo 2.
In Halo 2? Really?
Yeah, I really did.
I can't say those were my favorite games. Halo Reach was probably the best campaign of all of them. They don't a candle to Gears of War. Like the Gears of War campaign is 20 times better the story. But
co-op in Gears of War is one of my favorite co-op things I've ever done in my life.
So, but it's like if I was to go back, but then there's always like the memories of just with family, you know, and friends of Mario Karts and then GoldenEye back in the 64 days.
And for me, it's the original Zelda.
The original Zelda.
Zelda. I
original Zelda was
that.
Good. I remember marking on the map. Mm-hmm. Where everything was, so that
We had graph paper. Me and my dad, and we grew it on. I remember playing that, but for me, it's not. I mean, I do love the original Zelda. I got that, but I wasn't quite old enough to appreciate. You know, I was 5 when I got that system.
Right.
But for me, one of the very first games I remember like taking over my life and being like sitting in the basement and playing it from Christmas until basically New Year's until I had beat the game. Because every year I get, you know, one game for Christmas. It was Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past on Super Nintendo. That game took over my life.
Yeah,
Super Nintendo was really probably the system that I like probably spent the most time on. Between that game, a couple of the Final Fantasies,
Seven
like
Saga,
a Mystic Quest, Final mm-hmm. Fantasy, some of the other ones, and then freaking Super Metroid.
Aaron will never believe this. I never had a Super Nintendo.
Really?
I didn't either, but I played at my buddy's house. We played nothing but RPGs.
That's
what
it is, yeah.
Gosh. We would just
Super Mario RPG.
Uh-huh.
Super Metroid is like, it is a side-scrolling 16-bit video game that has more atmosphere mm-hmm. and mood, like with the graphics
right.
and the sound, but Link to the Past is probably the one that blows them all out of the water.
No, I remember all these because I'm on the same boat as Adam.
And then, like
my neighbor had
earlier,
it.
Oh man,
I had trouble sleeping because of how obsessed I mean, I legitimately developed insomnia as a child, getting so worked up playing because I would play it all day long with my buddy Aaron. Aaron Feldman
had
and I
problems.
I'm saying not this game. It
still
was
does.
The Link to the Past. I mean, not Link to the Past. The Quest for Glory series for the PC. Mm-hmm. It was a series of games that came out like when Sierra, in the heyday of Sierra games, when they were making like Leisure Suit Larry, King's Quest, uh-huh. Police Quest, Space Quest. They, Lori, Cole, and what was the other? There was a husband-wife team. They made a series called Quest for Glory that had the same aesthetic as like the King's Quest kind of games, but mm-hmm. there was an RPG element to it. So not only were you solving puzzles with like typing in commands, but you had to select a class and you could also fight monsters and you would.
Did they have a thief class?
They did.
Yeah, I definitely played that.
You could
game.
Raise your
oh
skills,
my gosh.
But there was three things about that game that were just like that were so ahead of their time and people don't really appreciate them. Number one was that you could play as a different classes, and because of the different class you chose, the way you would solve puzzles would be different. So there was the fighter, the fighter, the magic user, and the thief. So if you were one of the very first quests in the game is the town healer is missing her golden ring and you need to find it and return it to her. And when you walk out of the town gates, there's a tree outside the healer's house and there's a nest in it. And there's a bird in it. And if you walk by it, you see this little glint and you're like, oh, wonder what that is. So if you're the magic user, you work on your magic and use the fetch spell to cast it at the nest and bring it down and take the ring out and walk inside. If you're the thief, you, like, scale the tree, mm-hmm. like, tightrope walk down the branch, reach down, grab it, and then, like, jump off. And if you're the fighter, you pick up a bunch of rocks and just throw them at the nest until it breaks and falls down. But every puzzle in the game had different... And then, right. like, if you were the thief, you had a side quest where you could lockpick and break into doors and rob them.
Right.
But then the other thing that was cool about the game was not only did you play these quests, get the points, and you had a whole skill... You had a character sheet, you upped your skills and stuff. But when you finished the game... With all your skills, all your inventory, you could save the character, and then when the sequel came out, you got to import your character with all of his skills and inventory and stuff to play the second one. And then when you finished the second one, you did it to the third one, to the fourth one, to the fifth one. And each one had a different setting. The first one was set in a town called Spielberg, which is this kind of like Bavarian, like one of the villains is like a Baba Yaga and a troll and stuff like that. And the second one takes place in a desert place called Shapir with these cat people.
I thought I was going to go to Lucas after Spielberg.
Shapir, yeah. With these, these cat people and genies and elementals. The third one took place in this savannah, like desert with tiger people and leopard people and a jungle and desert and lion, you know, stuff. Fourth one took place in a place called Moldavia, and everyone, it was like a Transylvania with vampires and stuff. I can't, like, best, I don't know what it is about that game.
He's going to tell us every single detail.
I got, I love those games.
Watch the Twitch channel. He's going to play them all, too. If he can find them, he'll play them all.
If you like old computer games, there's a website, gog.com, goodoldgames.com. You can buy the whole set of five, the anthology, for like $10.
Yeah.
And it's worth it.
As long as you don't have anything to do for the next couple of weeks.
So, Bob, besides Zelda, anything that's captured your heart? Quite to the level that Tyler's heart was just captured right there.
I don't think anyone of us could get to that level.
There was a lot of humor in the book. They were really funny, too. There's a lot of jokes. They're such good games. Everyone should go home and play them right now.
Aaron's favorite game ever, Plants vs. Zombies.
Oddworld.
Which one, Abe's Odyssey?
Yup. That one. The one where... Yep. You had to go, the one that was like in Sega, I'm pretty sure.
No.
And then they moved it on over to the PlayStation.
Nope. It was on the PlayStation and moved over to the Xbox.
Yep. That's it. Because I know all these things. Either way, I absolutely loved Oddworld.
No, the first Oddworld was released on Sega, but it wasn't Abe's Odyssey. The one that you played when we were first together was Abe's Odyssey because it was my favorite of the Oddworld games. And then we bought a recent one that was released specifically for the Xbox that wasn't a port, and just wasn't as good.
I don't know what it is about
that franchise went downhill.
Like, the gameplay is not similar at all. I think it's just the sensibility of the graphics. Every time people talk about Oddworld, all I can think of is Earthworm Jim.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you said that, because I had to say the exact same.
Completely people talk about Abe and Oddworld, I immediately think Earthworm Jim.
Earthworm Jim, yeah. No, the only thing that gets close to... I mean, other than Metal Gear Solid 3, would be Final Fantasy X.
Really?
That game is super good.
Most people go 7. You know, that's the classy choice.
I'd take 10 over 7.
I didn't have a PS1, so I didn't play 7 as much. And I've got it on my PS3, and I've since played it multiple times. Yeah. But I can put in 10 now and still get you all of the extras.
But did it was I think part of mine might just strictly been laziness, because wasn't 10 came out late enough that it wasn't, because 7 was what, four discs
and I never had
on
a
the
PS1.
Yeah,
see, I never had a PS1, so I got the PC port of it where they added like the cinemagraphics. I can't say the word.
You were there.
Cinemagraphics. That's not the word.
No.
Cinematics.
There you
I don't
go.
Know
okay.
what I'm doing.
Cinematics.
There. All right. It's been a rough day.
Yeah, movie scene.
Today was a really rough day at work.
That got Bob's attention. Wait, what?
I'm not all put together, but cinematics. But that was 7. I played on the PC, though, but I love that one.
No, I mean, 7's, I think, probably held as the best of the series.
It's a good game.
But in terms of enjoyment, I think I enjoyed and just really liked all the extra stuff for 10.
Again.
Right. Because you had the
cinematics
sphere.
Stuff.
The cinematics were phenomenal, but the
cinemagraphics.
No, what's the?
Did you say Asperger's?
Esper. No, like the side games. The what's his name? Waka play. They all play that game that's in like in the sphere grid.
Anytime you say side game and Final Fantasy, all I can think is chocobo racing.
Right, yeah. it's akin to that, except it's you can, you know, you play these games and you recruit players, and it's fully involved in, like, the regular story. You can, like, talk to people, and you can scout teams, and you can do all this crazy stuff. But, I mean, it just added this whole other thing for me.
When you go to the top-down classic RPG, like JRPG, Final Fantasy, I mean, I played all of them, but I got into them later. There was a Final Fantasy that wasn't part of the main series on Super Nintendo only called Mystic Quest that I was really into. It was super fun. But for me, it's Chrono Trigger.
Yeah,
I can't talk about how many times I played through Chrono Trigger. I have the Chrono Trigger port on my DS, and I probably played that game on my DS more than
anything. That C, like that that crazy-looking C. I
love Chrono Trigger.
Anyway, so the Nerdcast, the only place where we'll open with the close of award season for movies, spend some time on books, and then let Tyler orgasm over an old computer game.
Okay. I'm just saying, if you like those old school 90s, early late 80s, early 90s.
Didn't mean to open it back yet.
Sierra Games, go find some copies of Quest for Glory. Download them on GOG.com.
Quest for Glory.
Just saying.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's about it for time. I was going to say I'm going to open the first close so Tyler can then say something else. So then
Tyler
we can
is our own little
close.
Jonah Hill.
Our little Jonah.
I don't know how to take that.
Yeah, I'm kind of.
I don't know if he's making a masturbatory joke or a fat joke or Academy Award nominated person joke.
It's like he's sitting around
the
pool.
You're an Academy Award nominated person.
Fatalities. Now that was way better.
So if you want to hear us talk about something special on next week's Nerdcast, of course, besides our Kansas City Planet Comic Con convention preview discussion, which we're all getting excited for, and me a little bit nervous for. But if you want to hear us talk about something in particular, you have a book, maybe a game that you orgasm over, talk a little bit about movies or boobies.
If you want to talk more about books, let us know.
Yes, Tyler can go on forever about it. Other than that, feel free to leave us a comment on how awesome we are this episode or how boring we are, whichever. But I guess until next time, we'll catch you next week on another episode of the Nerdcast.
Bye.